Let me just quickly talk you through the St. Maur's goat's cheese. This cheese has been made for nearly four centuries. It's been made like that. When we knew we were going to move to the Loire Valley and we were coming, the one ingredient that excited me the most was goat's cheese. It was the first thing. I think even before we moved into the house, I went and looked for the goat's cheese. And this is a St. Maur's goat's cheese.
Early this year, I travelled to France and to Le Calabash, the cookery school run by Sydney and Alison Bond, set in the heart of the Loire Valley in a beautiful little hamlet. The cookery school caters for eight people and is attached to their home. You get to stay in a beautiful French chateau just down the road and every day get to explore the ingredients, the provenance of the food of this region and take full advantage of Sydney and Alison's experience and skills in the kitchen. And what a fine kitchen they have too. So I'm having my cookery lesson and we've started the dessert with Alison, but we're moving on now to the souffle, the goat's cheese souffle.
Can you see I'm not cutting through it, I'm just running my knife around it. And the reason I'm doing that is because in the center of this cheese there's a straw. And I pull it apart and there's my straw in the center. And when they make it in the mold, they push the straw down the center. The straw is given to the cheesemaker by the controlling body, the AOC body that allows the... And on every single cheese, you can see the name of the cheese producer, his license number, and without that piece of straw in the center, it is not a saint, it cannot be called Saint Maur. And what's wonderful is in the olden days, let's say 200 or 250 years ago, they would use straw, but somebody would be writing on each one or by hand. They would write on their the name and the license number of the cheese, because that's how far back they were doing that. As you can see, there's our goat's cheese. What I want to do is I just want you to cut a small piece and I want you to taste it. So this is 10 days old. It's a 10-day-old cheese. The black around it that you see is basically salt and wood ash. And the wood ash that they would use in the olden days would be vine wood. What does that do? It basically cures the cheese and penetrates it, draws a little bit of the moisture out of the cheese and creates a protective film around the cheese, as you can see there. And you can see the cheese is drying from the outside, still creamy on the inside. That little skin is protecting the cheese. Myself personally, I love this cheese at around about 4 to 5 months old to eat as a cheese. I don't like it as much as an eating cheese at this young stage. What I do like it at this young stage is a cooking cheese. One of my favorite dishes is I take that, slice it, a little bit of flour, a little bit of egg, pistachio nuts, pan fry it and serve it in a lovely salad with sautéed candied pear and a little bit of a raspberry and cassis vinaigrette, one of my favorite dishes. So that the pear, the sharpness of the cheese and the vinaigrette with a really nice young rocket salad is superb.
While we taste the cheese, Sydney sets up food containers in front of us and with all the ingredients laid out that we need for the souffle.
So, what I've got is I've got my milk here. You want to make sure you use full fat milk. That's really important, okay? I got my slice of onion there.
So that's going in. So you've got the saucepan on the heat.
On the heat.
Then the onion.
The onion in there, a few peppercorns, my bay leaf. When you use a fresh bay leaf, always take it and just snap it. Crack it a little, because that allows the oils to be released, the flavors in the oil. Can you just from cracking that up, can you smell it?
I can smell it. And you know, fantastic. How many of us, that's the first time I've realized to do that with a bay leaf. I always just pop the bay leaf in, but you're saying crack it, break it, split it.
It releases the oil, otherwise it will not be released. So what we want to do is all we're trying to do now is for that milk, we just want to bring it to a simmer, warm it up, and we just want the milk to take on the flavor of the pepper, the onion, and the bay leaf. That's what we want to do. And then we just leave it for a few seconds just to infuse, okay? While that's on, we've got another pot ready there. We're going to take our butter. So as I said to you, in France, we use, our butter is never less than 80%, okay? So this is 84% butter, 84% fat content. We use a butter we use in a school is only from Normandy. We buy no other butter. It's a secret to a good croissant, a good brioche, is the butter. And in this dish, it's really important. So what we're making here is we're actually making just a little roux. That's what we're doing, okay? Mm. Don't do it over to a warm heat. Just melt that butter down. Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to color the flour, okay?
Or heat it too fast.
Heat it too fast, okay? There, the milk has just come to a simmer. Mm. Take it off now and let it just basically infuse into the milk. And I can smell that from here already.
I can. It's gorgeous. That onion already. With the milk. And you're just smoothing the spatula around the pot with the butter as it's smoothing out, melting there nice
melting
and gently.
That's fine.
And all the little nodules.
There we go. Okay. And what do we do? Add our flour now.
Yeah.
So the flour we use in the cookery school is a all-purpose flour for our cooking. And what do I mean by all-purpose flour? Normally our flour is either, it's a 55 flour, that's what it is. Okay, can you see that coming together there?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Okay. You've mixed it into the butter. It's nice and creamy, smooth paste.
That's a nice, nice little roux. That's what we got there. If I did not have a spatula, I would use a whisk. If I had a whisk, I would slowly add the milk. As I have a spatula, I can add the milk all at once because the spatula will break down the roux and the milk, okay? Add my milk. Do that.
Through the sieve.
Do the serve.
Take out the onion and the bay leaf.
Bay leaf.
And the
pepper. There we go. And just look at how this comes together now.
Lovely.
Okay, you'll see in a second. It'll come together as a smooth roux. See that come together?
Wow, yeah.
Look at that there.
It looks like cream potato is the look.
Yes.
But it's beautiful.
Everybody always asks me, why does mashed potato taste so good in France? Quite simply because 30% of it is butter. Okay? And you work the butter into the potato. When the butter's cold, you actually emulsify the butter into the potato. And you make it in your mixer and the paddle. And just add the butter block by block. So anyway, here we go. We got our roux there. So what I'm going to do is because I've added cheddar to this recipe and taken a little of the goat's cheese out of the recipe, I'm going to add a little paprika. The reason is paprika and cheddar cheese, wonderful marriage, a little like Alison and I. Okay, add my paprika there, and it's a sweet paprika, and I'm going to work that into my roux now. And before I add my egg yellows to that, I need that just to cool down slightly, okay? Mm-hmm. But can you see how well that's brought together there? Look
brought
at
together
that.
Beautifully.
And I can smell the paprika coming through now.
Yeah, and the colour's changing, of course, with that redness of the paprika.
That's really good.
Beautiful.
What I'm going to do now is I've got my eggs, and I'm just going to separate them quickly.
I love separating eggs.
You do?
Yeah. It's a bit of...
Yes.
It's like a meditation, really. You just, you know, get on with it and... See if you can how much you can capture in each half of the egg.
Yeah. Alison does this very well because she always uses a third bowl. Being a pastry chef, she's always exceptionally sensible and careful and methodical in the way she does things. And she tells me sometimes I'm a little bit of a cowboy, you know.
It's the wild side in
the
you,
the wild
Sydney.
Side in me, that's it. This is a, you know. Okay, the Zulu in me, yes. The next thing that's really, really important is the container that we're going to cook this into needs to be buttered and floured. Something that a lot of people don't know is what to get the butter to stick to the container is take your container and put it into the fridge first.
Oh.
Because by putting it into the fridge, the container is chilled and what's going to happen is when I brush it on, the butter will automatically stick to the side of the container.
So these are stainless steel containers, these metal containers?
Little metal containers, and we could call them pudding bowls if you wanted to. Mm. They work well for us, and you'll see why in a second. You could use, many a times when we go and visit friends, I inevitably get caught up in the kitchen, and somebody says, oh, can you do something for me? And I'll say, well... You know, come on, get a few coffee cups out. Everybody's got some cheese in their fridge, milk, eggs in their fridge, and I make a souffle. And it's so fast, it's always good fun.
Yeah.
And this, how many houses...
People love inviting you round for dinner, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. But honestly, and like I say, if you haven't got this container, coffee cup works very well. And if you look at all the ingredients we got here, everybody's normally got those ingredients in their fridge at home. You know what I mean? So it's really not a problem. And whatever cheese they got in, one of my favorite souffles to make like this is a Stilton souffle.
Oh, yeah.
But then what I do is I take a little bit of the Stilton, and I cut it into little cubes and put it into the freezer. And just, not totally freeze, but just make sure they nice and firm.
Yeah.
And I fold the little cubes into the souffle so that when you're eating the souffle is studded with Stilton and really nice. Stilton and walnut, really, really nice. And then what you can do is on the side, serve it with a little bit of caramelized apple. And that is a lovely, lovely souffle. Whenever we have people here, I always say to them, take the recipe, have a look at it later, not while I'm teaching you, because you come here to learn techniques. Technique is the most important thing. And a recipe is something you can read anywhere. And you can take the recipe away, but if you don't watch what we're doing and see these little techniques, these little tricks, because that's what makes it such an easy job to do.
When we come back, we hear the next steps for the double baked goat's cheese souffle and more from the dessert that Alison's helping us create. So I'm in the kitchen with Brian. Both of us are the students today with Sydney and Alison Bond as we are working our way through the dessert and the double baked goat's cheese souffle.
This is such an easy dish for somebody to do at home. Could you have friends in and prompt you arrival, whatever, maybe, but also a great dish. And when you see us, when you eat it in a short while, you'll realize how easy it is to prepare. What we're going to do now is I'm going to take my cheese and I'm going to just grate it.
This is the cheddar.
The cheddar first, the hard cheese there. Just push it through the grater. And the big side of the grater, not finely grated, because I don't want the cheese to melt into the roux. What I want the cheese to do is to basically, once again, use that word stud. Stud the souffle, okay? The goat's cheese will melt in easier than what the cheddar will. And just push it through there.
Grated goat's cheese and cheddar cheese all together on the greaseproof paper. Just lovely.
And we're going to fold that into the mixture now. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask Alison whisk my egg whites up to me. She's going to whisk the egg whites up to a stiff peak. And what I'm doing now is folding the cheese into the roux. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see it's not melted in?
No.
And I don't want it to melt in.
Yeah.
I want it just to stud in a little there. And that's really, really nice. Now, I'm going to season that. Okay. A little bit of salt. Many a chef will say to you the secret between a successful dish and a bad dish is a pinch of salt. Salt brings out flavor, and like anything, it's all about don't overdo what you use. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything in moderation. And when people come here to the school, many of them say, wow, use a lot of butter, you use a lot of cream, you use a lot of eggs. We don't eat like this every day, but we're teaching you to go. A Frenchman has a small piece of cheese every single day of his life, but he has a salad with it, and that breaks down the cheese. We eat bread every day. We have, but everything is done in moderation. We don't eat and balanced out, and that's so important.
I have to say, sometimes, what if I eat bread or if I eat too much dairy, I can feel it. You know, I have a digestive problem with it. But I've been here now for nearly 5 days. I've not had any problems whatsoever, and I've been eating bread, croissants, butter and cream in everything, but in the right proportions, because everywhere I've been, it's been prepared beautifully with skill. And so clearly it's about, as you said before, what else you're eating around it, if you're having processed foods, and having the best quality, freshest ingredients that helps.
That is so important. And as I say, in moderation, a Frenchman will have a croissant or a piece of bread every morning. He'll have his coffee every morning. At lunchtime he'll have a four-course menu. In the evening he'll have a light dinner. But it's all in moderation. We don't eat foie gras every day or every week or every month. A Frenchman or folk living in France will eat a piece of foie gras only on special occasions, birthdays or weddings or something like that. They don't eat foie gras all the time. So it's all about, like I say, about moderation. So we've got our egg whites ready there. What we're going to do is just take a little of that egg white.
So Alison's whisked up the egg white in the mixer. So that's done for us. So that's lovely, light as a feather going
in
there.
And what I'm going to do is just mix a little of that into my roux. Now what that does is why only a little? Because it acts as an adhesive, if you want to call it that, to the rest of the egg white when I add it in a few seconds. There we go. Can you see how that just goes in?
Yep.
And it's lightly lightening up that roux.
Yep.
And what will happen now is as I add that, there we go. Oh, I can just smell that speckaloos come out of the oven.
The biscuit base has come out. Beautiful.
That smell.
How's it looking, Alison? Okay, good.
Have they done well? No doubt. So here we go. I'm going to fold this, and you want to watch this. I fold that with my spatula into my roux. It doesn't take long. When you said earlier on, said to me, what do you need to be careful of? When the word souffle is mentioned, so many people go into shock, you know, so delicate. It's just keep to the basics, enjoy it, get it in there, and you will enjoy the dish. I'm going to get a spoon now. And what we're going to do is place them into our containers. So what happens is it all depends on the size of your container, the cooking time, because some people might use a smaller container or a bigger container. But the cooking time is normally between 14 and 16 minutes. Okay. So can you see that cheese in there studded? You can see the studding of the cheese in the mix. And there we go. And what Alison has done once again for me, you can see I can't get along without her, can you? I can't manage at all without her. She's done that. She's boiled the kettle for me. She's put the oven on. The oven is on a 195 degrees centigrade. I've got a little bath, if you want to call it that. I place them into there. Okay. Like that. And as I say, we have the kettle there. And I pour in boiling water into there.
Oh.
And I just want the boiling water to be about 20% of the
height
of the container. And that's going to go into the oven. So basically what I'm doing is I'm cooking these souffles very, very similar to what Alison cooks her crème brûlées in a water bath. For me, the only way to cook a crème brûlée is in a water bath. Alison taught me that. And those will take there. We're going to put our timer on, and I'll check them after 12 minutes. But after 12 minutes, they should be ready.
Ooh.
And we'll see them when they come out.
Wow.
Are we happy with that?
Yeah.
So we've been making the double baked goat's cheese souffle with Sydney, and when we've done that and it's there baking in the oven, Alison takes over and continues teaching us, me and my fellow student Brian, how to make her signature dessert, including the chocolate fondant. Whilst we're preparing, of course, there's always chat and banter, and Alison explains how the lessons go at Le Calabash.
Our maximum is 8 people. We do sometimes have 10. Obviously, we won't turn away 2 extra people. 8 people is a nice number because it's everybody has their, more or less has their own workstation. We might pair people up, especially if they're couples or they come together. And it gives people plenty of space, and it's a more personal cookery course as well.
Feels very personal. You can sit in the little dining room adjacent to the kitchen, but I just love all your utensils. It's all wood. You've got flagstone floor. It's just so beautifully French and has that feel of a good country kitchen. That's what it feels like.
That's what we wanted to, when we created the kitchen, we wanted to make people feel comfortable, and we didn't want to have stainless steel everywhere because we didn't want people to go away, come in here and feel almost like, oh, you know, this is for professional chefs, and, you know, a little bit scared. So we wanted people to feel comfortable and at home, and, you know, almost like they're in their own kitchens.
Yeah. Okay, so Brian's back with the pan for the water bath here. So what's next then, Alison?
Okay, so we're going to put that on, the water bath, and we're going to slowly melt the pop that on. They were going to slowly melt the chocolate, the butter and the creme fraiche together over the water bath.
It just rested the bowl on top of the
sauce
pan.
Just on top. It just sits above the water, so the steam will melt the chocolate. We don't want it to touch the water, the bowl, okay? And that will just slowly melt together. While that's, we really need that to melt first, and we don't want that to be too hot when we add it to our eggs. But what we're going to do next is take our eggs and our sugar on the machine, on our KitchenAid machine, we're going to whisk up our eggs and sugar until they're nice and pale and quite thick. And then we're going to then add our melted chocolate and butter to that.
So we're working away on the mousse, and do check out all the recipes that we've talked about this morning from Le Calabash. They've been posted up on our website at Dubai Today there at dubaii1038.com. Click on the Dubai Today page and all of the pictures from this experience are there. There's also a film as well if you fancy trying out some of these techniques and recipes. So whilst we're working away, Sydney tells us about making fruit compotes. And as I said, you know, it being in the kitchen is also about the conversation and the connection you make with the people that you're cooking with. Sydney, being from Zululand, he talks often fondly about his home country.
What we do is normally in August, late August, September, we pick our own apples at the back. We've got our Pink Ladies, we've got our Canadas, we have our own pears, we have plums, Mirabelles, sour cherries. We pick all those ourselves and we make our own compotes, we make all our own jams. What we do is with the apples, we use the apples only for compote. We make probably about 250 jars of compote, and they all weigh around about 500 grams. So we do make around about 220 kilos of compote to last us through the year. And what we do is we infuse the compotes with either mango or raspberries or even banana is great, strawberry is great, and we use those compotes with our yogurts, but we also use them to make pastries and that. Our cherry tree has just blossomed. It's a sour cherry tree, and normally out of about trees we get about 300 bottles of sour cherry jam.
Beautiful. I can see all the jars of jams and up on your dresser, which is again just adding to that feeling of the French country kitchen. It's lovely.
How are we doing? Have to give you both a jar or two to take home with you. You can remember us.
When I'm having my toast and jam in Dubai, I'll be thinking of you here in Le Calabash Cookery School.
You might want to put that in the mail, because that might be my snack over the next few days while I'm still traveling.
Oh, it's melting beautifully. Look at that, the
just
creaminess.
Just take a little bit of time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it, with cooking. It's a lot of, it slows you down. It gives you some, have some patience. It's not a bad thing.
You know, I actually think that the fact that we cook together, my wife and I think that's why we get along so well in our marriage, is we communicate well in the kitchen. And early on, when we were first married and you're working things out, we were both arguing in life and in the kitchen. And now it's like a dance in the kitchen, and we enjoy it more, and we enjoy being together more. So it's, I think it's important for families to cook together.
There's nothing as wonderful as bringing people together, as having a evening in the kitchen, cooking, having a, you know, just having a drink together, having a chat, and it just brings friends together. Honestly, it does.
And clearly, that people come here either on their own or with friends or as couples, you know, married couples, and they get to meet the other people in their group, and they become friends. But Sydney, just explain a little bit on what one can expect over the course of the week here at the school with regards to the how many dishes they cook, or what the sort of schedule is roughly.
So it's a 5-day schedule. People arrive on a Sunday, leave on a Saturday morning. Sunday evening is a welcome dinner. We normally do Moroccan or North African cooking. Love cooking tagine. Alison will do 2 or 3 French classical desserts. She does an amazing apple tart au tan. On the Monday is a poultry and meat cookery day. In the afternoon, she teaches them on a Monday what she's teaching you here now. And Tuesday, fish day. Fish comes in 4 o'clock in the morning, comes from La Rochelle. We have a fish day. Tuesday evening, we, depending on what they do, normally have a little bit of a break. They can go to a spa. They can cycle. We have bicycles available for them. We might take them to the river for a picnic if the weather is great in the evening. Wednesday morning is market day. We go and look at ingredients, have breakfast in a little coffee shop, come back. Alison always cooks lunch for us on a Wednesday, and inevitably one of her nice quiches. She does an amazing quiche, and she does it with a goat's cheese, a local goat's cheese, and local Rion Riette, and that, which always great. Afternoon of macarons, and that's always the highlight of the week, is the macarons. Alison's macarons always seem to beat me, and but people love them. Wednesday evening, we take them out for dinner to one of our best friends who has a one Michelin star restaurant close by. He's held a Michelin star for close to 24 years now. He doesn't advertise the fact that he has a Michelin star. It's all about the food. And we go there for dinner. Thursday morning is a day out to the Chenonceau to do a chateau. And we normally go to Chenonceau and have lunch in a little small little brasserie or bistro. Come back here and we have a cooking evening here. And that's always it. We have a dinner demonstration, and I always use duck from a local duck farmer. Friday mornings is a full-on souffle dish. We teach two cheese souffles. We teach chocolate souffle, lemon souffle in the mornings, also always a hit. We have a lunch. And then on Friday afternoon, we cook African dishes. And what I mean by African dishes, Southern African, East African influenced dishes, which are dishes that I've taken with me all my life, always a hit. And the evening we have what we call a Zulu barbecue, and we cook everybody gets involved. When I say Zulu barbecue, it's a dish that's influenced by Malaysian cooking, Indian cooking, and Dutch cooking, all brought together, and that's also always a hit. The peri-peri sauce is always a hit. We have a prize giving, certificate presentation, have an evening. Many a time we have lots of tears. Saturday morning, breakfast, and everybody goes their own ways. And you're so right, Suzanne. There's people here that we've had here, never ever met each other before. Somebody's come from Sydney, Australia, somebody from New York, and they are now the closest friends and will see each other twice a year. They visit each other across that distance, and they make friends here. Food honestly brings people together. We've had a group of people here recently, 9 people, met at the cookery school. It was about 10 months ago. And they, on the Friday night, they looked at each other and they said, let's meet in Africa the same time next year. And they've all booked out one of the African trips. And all the time, we're getting messages from them. And we see them connecting with each other. What are you cooking? What are you doing? And they're all over the world. The States, Brazil, Australia, and England. And they're in contact with each other all the time. And they post photos to each other of what they're cooking, what they're doing. And it's fantastic to see how people are brought together and looking forward to meeting each other in Africa. Yeah. And I just think food is one of those things that just brings people together. It's fantastic. It honestly is. You know, it really is.
Okay, I heard the beeping. Was that the souffle? Or?
That was the souffle.
So Sydney takes the soufflés out of the oven and the verdict is made. Slicing into those double-baked goat's cheese soufflés become our lunch. So I'm in the kitchen with Brian. Both of us are the students today with Sydney and Alison Bond as we are working our way through the dessert and the double-baked goat's cheese soufflé. Alison explains more about the process behind the dessert speckaloos.
For the white chocolate fondant, we melted the chocolate with the creme fraiche and with the butter over a bain-marie. Once that had melted and cooled down, then we whisked up the eggs and the sugar until they were nice and thick. We'd added lots and lots of air into them, and we got to what they call a ribbon stage. So the mixture's become very thick, it's increased in volume, and when you lift up the whisk, then it leaves a ribbon on the surface. Okay,
yeah.
All right. And then once you reach that stage, and you take your bowl off the machine, and you take your spatula, and you pour in your chocolate, your cooled down chocolate mixture, which you fold nicely into your sabayon, I guess you would call it, and then you take your flour and your dry ingredients, and you fold those in as well. So once you've folded all of that in, without, you know, trying carefully not to lose the air that you've spent a lot of time putting into the mixture, then you pour that over your speckaloos base. Just a layer, not too thick, a th- thin layer over your speculoos base, which you then put into the oven for about 20 minutes. And that just cooks nicely in the oven at 170 degrees centigrade. And that's your second layer, which is where we've got up to now.
It looks really nice.
It looks.
You've done a good job, Brian, so far, I think we have.
Well done,
it's looking good.
Yeah.
I learned from the best.
Well, but I'm glad to see you've got Sydney, put Sydney to work, because he's peeling the pears.
Yeah, that's going to be our next layer, actually, the pears. It's a caramelised pear layer. And what we're going to do is we're going to caramelise the pears. We're going to add pectin to it, which will bring it together nicely. And it will be almost little cubes of pears set in a jelly or like a jam, which will be another, the third layer to our dessert. Yeah.
It's taking all day, but that's because it's special and it's made with love. So, okay, good.
So we're going on to our chocolate mousse layer now. A little bit more complicated. Are you up for this, Brian?
I'm ready.
Okay. What we need to get is a water bath like we had before, you know, a saucepan with a little bit of water in so that the bowl doesn't touch the bottom. And we're going to melt our chocolate over that.
Where do I find a saucepan?
Okay, just over here.
It's a nice Valerona chocolate, beautiful pieces.
We're using 64% Manjari, which is my favourite chocolate to use in desserts.
And what is Manjari?
Manjari is, like I said, 64%. It's got a bit of a fruity flavour. It's an African chocolate. And it's we only use chocolate from Africa here in the school. Yes, we think it's the best. And it has a little bit of a, almost a fruity flavour, like I say, which just adds a really nice, and it's very smooth, it's very velvety. And you'll see that when we make the chocolate mousse at the end, it'll be a very smooth, velvety chocolate mousse. What we're going to do at the same time, just going to wipe that off, we're going to whip up our cream.
Okay. Back to the machine.
Just softly whipped, don't over whip it, because when you over whip cream, it becomes fatty. Okay, and what'll happen then is you'll get a fatty chocolate mousse. When you whip up your cream, watch it. Takes a little while, but you just want a nice soft whip, okay? All mousses, whenever you make a mousse, very important you don't over whip your cream.
Whilst that's happening, we're melting the chocolate at the same time over the water, hot water basin.
That's right. Let that slowly melt. Now, what's important about the chocolate is that once that chocolate's melted, okay, it'll be around 65 degrees centigrade, 65, 70. Okay, at that point we'll take it off. The temperature, the optimum temperature for you to add your chocolate to the other ingredients will be 48 degrees centigrade. So what we're going to aim to do is by the time we've put all our other ingredients together and done what we need to do with them, then our chocolate will have come down to 48 degrees centigrade. Okay, that's, you know, in theory that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And obviously it depends on the temperature in the room, how cold it is, how warm it is, etc. So what I'll always do is have my pan of hot water still there on standby, but if my temperature comes down too rapidly, I can bring the temperature back up again by putting it over the hot water. If it doesn't come down fast enough, then I'm just going to take a spatula or spoon and just stir it to bring the temperature down more quickly.
And this is why you say men have a hard time, because you're doing some serious multitasking here.
I know, it is.
But
it is a bit of a multitasking.
I don't think I'm going to win. I'm just going to give up now.
It's almost ready.
Mm-hmm. Lovely, but that's beautiful. How are the pears coming along, Sydney?
Nearly there. Can you see what I've got there? It's what we could call a little brunoise.
Uh-huh.
Quite simple. Just cut them lengthwise the one way. Cut them into matchsticks. And then chop them, and I'm nearly there. So I need 750 grams, I believe. But they're lovely. They're not overripe. They're nice and firm. Yeah, I've just tasted one. They're really good.
And they're finely cubed. What did you call it again?
Brunoise. The brunoise, finely cubed. And it's quite simple. You slice it, turn the pear over onto a flat side, cut it into like little sticks, and then turn it around and just chop it into little cubes.
Lovely.
There we go.
I tell you, I'm having fun because I never make desserts. So this is...
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a great experience.
And the fact that it's layered dessert, so you've got to wait for one thing to happen to move on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
Whilst Alison and Brian get on with the dessert, the chocolate pear and speculoos délice, I asked Sydney who inspired him the most in his career.
The most inspirational person for me when it comes to cooking was my nanny, my Zulu nanny. I was raised by a nanny. I grew up in KwaZulu-Natal in southern Africa, and my nanny was just a superb cook. And when I say superb, I mean that she would go out and go and pick wild spinach. I used to shoot guinea fowl. She'd teach me how to pluck the guinea fowl, and we'd spit roast the guinea fowl. She was just fantastic, and she could cook Indian-influenced food exceptionally well, because the part that I grew up was very Indian, mainly Punjabi-style cooking, Cape Malaysian cooking. But my father was also an exceptional cook. My father was Irish, and at weekends he would cook for us. So he would cook things like grilled liver and onions and Irish stews, oxtail, those sort of things. Lamb brains he loved, pork trotters, lamb trotters, tripe. He was very good. So as I grew up, I went into the kitchen, worked with Italians, and a chef by the name of Luigi was a tremendous inspiration to me. And then as I trained, I would say that the chefs that I worked with inspired me. I was very lucky. I was privileged in the sense that I worked with in a very good property. I trained in Grosvenor House and
in London,
Grosvenor House in London. That's where I trained and went to Westminster College. For me, at this very moment, as an inspiration would be it's not actually a person or a chef inspires me, but ingredients inspire me more than anything else at the moment. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Alain Ducasse. I think he's a superb chef. I think he's very inspirational. But I think the ingredients in this area where we live in the Loire Valley inspires me more than any chef, because the whole way of life here, it's not, I actually don't think it's about chefs anymore. I think it's about ingredients. And many a time you look at some of these TV shows, and it's actually not chefs that are inspiring you, but people that have come into the industry and... A term that you use is food heroes, people, farmers, people who aspire to doing things small but doing them well. And we have that here, and in the UK, all over the world, we have that now. And I think that's what I'd like to see, is more small producers. Yeah.
There's still lots to do for the white chocolate fondant and the chocolate pear and speckled delice. It takes nearly an entire day to complete. But once complete, it's a true delight. Do check out the pictures online to see the process and the end result. And so we come to the end of our culinary journey at Le Calabash Petit Conservatoire de la Cuisine in the Loire Valley. Sydney and Alison Bond are an absolute delight as hosts and as chefs and teachers. You not only go through the whole culinary journey, you go through the whole social connection and the education and the learning about the provenance of the food and ingredients, and about each other's lives as well, the people that you join at cookery school.
And I'm eating my dessert that you've helped me create and make today with your guidance. I'm enjoying it very much. It's been a fabulous few days. Thank you.
Oh, it's been absolutely wonderful for us to have you here. Thank you so much for coming. We just recently saw you in Dubai, and as we said to you today, we showed you a few of the ingredients we brought back from Dubai, which have inspired us going across to the market. We loved it. But honestly, we look forward to seeing you in Dubai, and hopefully very soon, because we've loved it. Thank you so much for coming.
Started at the Dubai World Trade Center when you hosted lunch that day for the women's lunch. That was amazing. And you talked about Le Calabash then, and that was a couple of years ago. And now being here and actually seeing it for real has been a great treat. And Alison, we never got to talk about your macarons, did we?
No, we didn't, did we? And it would have been nice to have thrown a few of those in today as well.
The layers and layers.
We could have made a few macarons and sugar springs and, you know, just to finish it off. But which we do normally do, actually, but there was this only enough hours in one day. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously an invite. Come back and learn how to make macarons with me, because, you know, I'd love to teach you.
I had my certificate. I had successfully cooked St. Maur cheese souffle under the fair guided hand of Chef Sydney Bond, and the chocolate pear and speckled delice under the fair hand of Alison Bond. All the details are up on our website, pictures and how to connect with Le Calabash there in the Loire Valley. That's it from me. Have yourselves a great weekend.